Eduardo, thanks again for lending a little bit of your time to speak about music.
It's a pleasure
from
to be here.
Your perspective. And I was wondering, you've been writing about music and about computer music at least since 90s or maybe even earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, also considering all the technological developments in recent decades, are there some key ideas or reference points in your early publications that are still important or central for you as a researcher and a musician?
Yeah, this is an interesting question because it is something that I always think myself, you know. I guess because I am immersed in doing these things, and as you know, technology is evolving very fast, so there is not much time really to think about, you know, about things that you propose and so on. But I think there are maybe some lessons that I have learned since the 1990s, especially in the field of artificial intelligence, for example, which is now quite fashionable. You know, mm-hmm. The politicians talk about the dangers of AI, and big company bosses talking about, you know, the AI will be bad for society and so on. But, you know, not only me, but musicians in general have been using AI already for over 25, 30 years. So it's nothing new, really.
Mm-hmm.
What is new, perhaps, now is that there are certain AI algorithms that use information that is input to it to learn things.
Mm-hmm.
And now this information is more widely available. You have tons of information that has been collected by big companies, internet companies. And now this information make these AI algorithms quite interesting and powerful. But what I can say from my experience is that the level of creativity of these algorithms is still very poor. Now, I don't think, at least in music, that there will be a replacement for artists and things like that. You know, I think it's a little bit too much. And it's true, I began my career thinking about, you know, developing programs that would compose pieces of music by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And but the more I've tried to do this, the more I learned that it's, even though machines can compose music, you know, the music is not good, you know, from a aesthetic perspective. It can be functional. You can write music for, you know, put people on the telephone hold or for radio programs.
Okay, you don't need composers.
Exactly.
For that.
You don't need composers for that. And I think the lesson to learn is that, you know, even though technology is becoming increasingly more sophisticated, to me, I think these technologies will improve our creativity rather than replace our creativity. So my message is, composers, musicians, don't be afraid. You know, these things are here to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this theory that the more a computer can do things that we consider as acceptable, the more humans will push themselves to the other direction to try to break these rules and try to be increasingly more creative and inventing new sounds, inventing new things. And and I think this is where we are now. And this festival, you know, that's going to happen this weekend here in Riga is a good, you know, demonstration of this kind of thing. You see composers mm-hmm. using technologies in very creative ways,
mm-hmm.
perhaps ways that were not envisaged by the people who developed those technologies.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That is the interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said, composers have used artificial intelligence to produce some sorts of sounds or compositions, at least two or three decades, so it's no big surprise or nothing new. And I think also for people who follow the developments of cognitive sciences, it's also nothing new, and it's pretty much, yeah, the hype is not so.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there are a few problems I see, I've seen in my career. One is the definition of artificial intelligence itself that is being, you know, changed. And to my view, it is a bit distorted at the moment because it is being associated with a specific kind of algorithm, which is based on neural networks. Then there is the deep learning and now the chat GPT, with transformer learning and so on. But there are many other avenues of artificial intelligence that perhaps are not so well developed yet. But these are, to my view, the models that can really make a difference. Because at the moment, what we have is a black box that finds some patterns in data.
Yeah.
But we have no idea what's happening inside this black box, right? And we people, we can explain ourselves how we do things, how we make conclusions. We have logics, if A is B, then B can be C. We have a logic that we follow in our cognitive processes. And machines are not good at doing that.
Yeah.
So when AI can, I believe it will eventually take into consideration the logics of how our cognitive process work and how our musicality works, then things will begin to get interesting, I think.
You also mentioned the word creativity. I watched on YouTube a video. It was published some 7 years ago. It was about bio computers.
Right.
And also how you managed to create a performance on stage while you're also interacting. And also in that video, you mentioned the words interaction and creativity more than once. And it was the first time I really saw the concept of bio processors being used in creating sounds and creating a work of art. So, I was wondering, how do you see these aspects of creativity and interaction in terms of bio computers, and also how this field has changed since then, and does it collide with your interest in quantum computers?
Yes. You see, one thing that I realized, since the very beginning of my work with AI, is that AI is software, right? They are algorithms that you make the models, and then you put on a machine to run for you. The problem is, I think, that the computers that we still use today, they are based on the invention of the 1940s. Those big mainframes now became smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Now we have microprocessors. But essentially, the way in which computers work has not changed since computers were invented, which is the digital, is binary, switches on and off, on and off. You have these millions of switches that switch on and off, and then you make the models, you run the programs, and so on. Of course, there were also what they were called, in the past, analog computers, which is not considering on and off, but maybe states that are not so well defined. And I always had this, this desire to experiment with other kinds of hardware. Now, are there any other kinds of computer architectures that we can perhaps harness to make these AI models more interesting? So I came across with this idea of the biocomputation. Of course, I'm a musician by training, and I'm not a biologist. What I did, I copied what other people have invented and so on, and I implemented some biocomputing devices to process sounds and so on. These are very difficult things to do. It's interesting because even though there is no progress in which I could say these are better than the digital machines we have at the moment, at least there were some things that I did that I think are interesting. For example, instead of modeling bioprocesses in digital machines, why not use the real biology to do that? So this is how I started doing that. with the bioprocessor that we made in our lab, we input electricity to the organism, then we measure current at the other side, and then we consider that the change that happened with this information that we input in is some sort of intelligent processing, right? Which in a way is what every living being does. Yeah. You have sensors that sense the environment around you, then you react according to the stimuli or so on. So this is more or less what I was trying to do with music. So I made this musical instrument where you play sounds to it. Sounds are converted into voltages. Input the voltages into this organism, which I call the biocomputer. And then at the other side, we measure the current that these organisms output. And these are then converted back into musical information. So what you get is the organism reacting to some sort of input that you give to it.
Yeah.
Right? And we were able to more or less control how much changes you want the organism to make in the information. But then 3, maybe 4 years ago, I came across developments in quantum computing. I was aware already of the theory behind it, but it was not until maybe 2018 that companies began to actually making experimental processors that people could start trying.
And someone funding all that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So and some funding and companies began to demonstrate that this sort of thing is possible. And I immediately said, okay, this is perhaps what I was looking for 10 mm-hmm. years ago. Now, a new kind of hardware that deals with information in a different way. Mm-hmm. So a quantum computer is not a digital computer that is based on switches. It basically operates at the subatomic level where pieces of information can be many things at one time. You know, it's a little bit mind-boggling to explain this. But information inside a quantum computer, it can be many things, you know, occupying the same space. And this is wonderful, I think. I have this dream of composing a piece of music that is represented as a quantum state inside a quantum machine. But every time you listen to it, it will be different because you collapse the quantum states into different values that this machine can assume in this space. So these are the things I'm trying to...
Some kind of quantum aleatoric, but at a new level.
A new level. Because it's imagine yourself that you have you have information stored somewhere in a cloud,
mm-hmm.
but every time you look at this cloud, you got one aspect of this information, one facet of it,
mm-hmm.
right? So if I can have a piece of music that has many renderings, then every time I access this musical representation, I will get a different version of it.
Mm.
And what I'm going to present here in the festival this weekend is inspired by this notion.
Mm-hmm.
So I still don't have the computer giving me back these different versions, but I have a representation that in the future, when these machines become more available and more powerful, this dream may be possible to be realized. So what I've done now, I kind of did this not in a real-time situation, but offline. So I programmed the machine. I got these musical representations there. It's not memory, but it's in the program. And every time I run this program, I get a different version of it.
Yeah.
So I run this 16 different times, and I have 16 versions of the same short piece that will be performed this weekend. So depending on the time you go there, you hear a different version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But these versions are not being generated on the spot. I've worked with them beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that in the future I'll be able to do this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going towards that direction.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's a new kind of creativity, right? It builds on things that John Cage did already with throwing dice and playing the I Ching. But now we have machines that can take this to another level.
Or other levels.
Another levels. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Correct.
What exactly is the situation with quantum computers like right now, considering composers or new aspiring composers who study in universities? What are they able to do with quantum mechanics, or should they go to specific universities where they have these huge hardware sets, or can they do something on their laptop?
Okay, so it is all developing very fast. Let's say 2 or 3 years ago, there were only one or two companies that had these machines. And I was lucky enough that I managed to get in touch with people inside the company who were interested in music and art and so on. They provided me access to it. But then to learn how to use it was another challenge.
I can imagine, yeah.
So it took me 2 years to kind of just to get my head around it, you know, how these things work. But I would say that today things are changed. So there are many startup companies that are some of them funded by big ones, spin-offs. There are a number of programming languages that are accessible. For example, most musicians today know a bit of Python.
Yeah.
Right?
Open source
stuff. So, if you are working already with music technology, do some PD or Max programming, know a little bit of Python, it is already possible to try things out.
Okay.
Right? And we held in Berlin last month the second international conference in this topic, where we have people come in presenting papers and showing the experiments they have been doing and so on. So there is something happening already. Yeah. I think the main problem is to understand the theory behind quantum computation, because it's a completely different way of thinking. I usually compare with, I think John Cage said once that he does not compose, he prepares the situation for music to happen. This is more or less what we do with quantum computation. We don't write an algorithm to generate music. What we write is an environment with some tendencies, some probabilistic stochasticity areas and things that you may wish to happen. Then you run, then you get the result that may or may not be what you were expecting.
Yeah.
But the way to program the qubits, for example, as compared to bits, you have to spend a little bit of time to get yourself used to it.
Yeah,
there are good tutorials, out there on programming quantum machines.
So for a young aspiring composer, you can just look for it.
Exactly. And I've edited a book as well, Quantum Computer Music, last year. And in this chapter, there's a collection of chapters introducing quantum computing for musicians and also introducing music to quantum computer scientists. Because I think it's very important that quantum scientists also understand what music can and cannot do today. It is always the case, not only in quantum computing, but music technology in general, that people who develop technology have very little knowledge of music. And most of the examples and case studies they present are very, very classical, so to speak, modeling Bach or modeling Mozart, with these systems. There is no reason to stay, 3 centuries ago, with the whole knowledge of contemporary music we have today. So it's very important that scientists and music technologists, engineers, and so on, learn and understand how advanced music actually is. And then I think this thing is will begin to get together more close together. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, if anybody who is listening to us here and kind of, oh, I'd like to have a go at this quantum computing stuff, you know, there are resources out there that you can you can kind of self-taught, self-learn and so on. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be too long when the first courses here and there will begin to appear. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's quite natural that this is going to happen. Mm. But it's always good to be at the cutting edge, you know. If you want to be a bit different before the others, you know, the time to do it is now.
Mm-hmm. Of everything you've told so far, I think you gave at least one, if not few, viewpoints of how thinking about quantum computing, and maybe if the formulation can be, if I can say so, the logic behind quantum computers can change the way we think about musical compositions. From your point of view, is it possible to say how the quantum computers may affect the way we listen to the music, or in wider sense, can quantum physics, or may quantum physics also, and quantum computers change the way we treat psychoacoustics and all that?
Yes, this is so interesting. I think the main limitation that we have now, it does not matter if quantum computers become extremely fast, big, and so on. There is the limitation of the interface, I think. There is always this bottleneck, which is really annoying, actually. For example, today, audio still needs to be converted from analog to digital, then digital to quantum, mm-hmm. right? And I think this digital to quantum thing should disappear. We have to go from analog to quantum. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see a quantum microphone, right, that takes this audio that we are producing here now and represent this straight as qubits, not as digital samples first and then qubits after, but straight as qubits. And then your headphones or loudspeakers now getting quantum information.
And represent it as a wave.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think when we bypass this bottleneck, it's all because, you know, the limitation today is all because there is no such a thing as quantum memory yet. We cannot store quantum information.
Mm-hmm. So yet.
Mm-hmm. So when this is done, and when these interface bottlenecks disappear, then I think we will reach a new era of understanding cognition and understanding perception and so on, because what we'll be able to do with these qubits representing sound, representing our mind, or representing things that we do, you know, it will open a vast door to things that I cannot even imagine now. Mm-hmm. One line of research that we are developing in my lab, we have been quite active for the last 20 years in the field of brain-computer interfacing. Mm-hmm. So we have been developing brain-computer interfaces for people who have suffered an accident, or people who are severely motor impaired, to be able to make music, right? So if you cannot move your arms and your limbs, at least if we can detect some signals from your brain that can control something, even if it's very simple, you know, if we can control synthesizers and oscillators and things like that, then you already have some sort of mind-controlled
musical
instrument. Mm-hmm. So we've got these things there, you know, that we've developed for a number of patients and so on. And now I want to connect this with the quantum research. So we are beginning to see, you know, how can we get our brain scans input into a quantum machine and let this quantum processing algorithms to try to analyze and make sense of what your brain is doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that will open something that we can't even think of, you know, what that can be right now. But there is a huge area of research that is beginning already to happen. And of course, for music and cognition, this is perfect, because music still is the cognitive faculty that we have that we don't understand. We now understand language, we understand motor control, we understand navigation, we understand all these things, but we don't understand music yet. And I think the next frontier will be finding out more, understanding better how we process music, how we make music. And then, from a composer's perspective, I wanted to harness all these things to create tools in my studio to compose great music. I think that's my interest in all this.
In some way, you answered my last question, because in 2018, the Springer publishers, they also, I think, published your book on quantum computer music, and they published the Handbook of Systematic Musicology, and I thought, maybe on the next edition, there will be a chapter on quantum computer music.
Definitely will be. This is just waiting to happen. Now, it may not be me, but it is... It is a natural progression. There is no doubt about it. As computers become more powerful, as quantum technologies become more available, cognitive scientists will begin to use it. Now, it's just a matter of time that neuroscience will develop these studies based on what these machines can do. There are already debates, highly philosophical so far, but there are already debates on whether the brain is quantum, this kind of stuff, but this is very philosophical. I want to see the practical sides of it and the proofs by experiments that these things work. So I'm heading towards that, but I think it's a long road to go.
Well, as you said in the first chapters, in the first paragraphs of the book, the technology is already ubiquitous in the way music is experienced by the contemporary human, so it will be also...
Exactly.
This is like the point.
It's just 40 years, We take it for granted, but 40 years ago, we didn't have enough of these things we have today, Spotify, iTunes, massive access to databases. We used to have cassettes before, tapes and CDs and vinyls, and now what's going to be the future? We don't know. But every aspect of music today needs technology. There is no doubt about it. You have the musician out there playing maybe a traditional acoustic instruments, but in a studio with the very high tech microphones and the recording capabilities as possible. Then you have the distribution, the commercialization, and so on.
Of course, yeah.
And this is all thanks to computers. Yeah, if there is a new computer in the corner, is no doubt that there will be...
Yes, of course.
There will be a connection there. And what is different perhaps now is that the great majority of musicians today are technological. They know technology. We know technology. We know how to program machines. It is going to be much easier for us to
make the next leap.
Don't need to wait for the big companies to give us the software and stuff. We can start developing these things right now.
Eduardo, thank you very much for this very exciting piece.
It's a pleasure, Davis. I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
And best of luck in the upcoming events in Riga here, and then with your creative work.
Thank you so much. Thank you.